Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about wolves in Yellowstone National Park, the invasive shrub buckthorn, and public land access for hunters in Montana. It's Monday, March 2nd. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Public meetings over a newly released agreement that will guide the remainder of the Anaconda Superfund cleanup will be held over the next 2 weeks. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports the first public meeting is today.
If approved, the $30 million deal between the Atlantic Richfield Company and Anaconda Deer Lodge County will expand efforts to remove hazardous metals in attics and yards, provide free blood lead monitoring for anyone who wants it, and fund economic development in Anaconda, among other efforts. Copper mined in nearby Butte was smelted in Anaconda, spewing toxic chemicals like arsenic and lead over a tract of land about the same size as New York City. The smelter closed in 1981, and the area was put on the Superfund National Priorities List 2 years later. The deal still needs to be approved by the County Commission, and the five meetings will offer the public a chance to weigh in on the agreement. Visit our website for more information on when and where the meetings will take place. I'm Nick Mott, Montana Public Radio.
Democratic candidate for Governor Mike Cooney has named Casey Schreiner as his running mate. Schreiner, the House Minority Leader during the 2019 legislature, dropped out of the governor's race earlier this month, saying he lacked the resources to continue his campaign. Fellow Democratic gubernatorial candidate Whitney Williams has announced she'll name her running mate today. Another Montana Republican running for governor has named his running mate. Kayla DeRoche reports Greg Gianforte tapped lawyer Kristen Juris for his lieutenant governor.
At a rally in Billings Sunday, Gianforte said he's choosing Great Falls-based attorney Kristen Juris. He said she's helped farmers, ranchers, and small businesses navigate red tape in Montana.
She'll be a partner in the governor's office as we put Montana back on the right track.
Juris is a fourth-generation Montanan who grew up on a ranch near Conrad. She's worked in law for more than 30 years and ran unsuccessfully for Montana Supreme Court in 2016.
Before Greg called me, I had actually announced to my family and my friends that I was retiring from my legal practice. That phone call brought me out of retirement. I am excited about running as his lieutenant governor and working with him to make Montana an even better last best place.
Gianforte is Montana's current representative in U.S. Congress. This is his second run for governor after losing in 2016 to Democrat Steve Bullock. This year, Gianforte is running against State Attorney General Tim Fox and State Legislator Al Olszewski in the June 2nd Republican primary race for governor. Democrats businesswoman Whitney Williams and current Lieutenant Governor Mike Cooney are also vying for the seat. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Yellowstone National Park wildlife biologists will host Facebook Live events each Tuesday in March to commemorate the 25th anniversary of wolf reintroduction in the park. Rachel Kramer reports.
In the first Facebook Live this Tuesday, senior wildlife biologist Doug Smith will recap the events leading up to the transfer of 8 gray wolves from Jasper National Park in Canada to Yellowstone in 1995. Smith says wolves have been and remain a controversial species.
There's isolated problems about everything, and really, it's made the world's first national park a better place, a more complete ecosystem. We have all the original mammals back in place.
Subsequent Tuesdays will highlight some of the scientific discoveries learned in the last 25 years, wolves' effect on visitors' experience, and the global impact of their reintroduction.
The high profile of Yellowstone, the high profile of wolves, definitely has been seen across the globe. Wolves have increased all over Europe because of human tolerance, not because of a growth in habitat. You know, they're trying to bring back carnivores in other places in Asia and Africa.
On the last Tuesday of the month, Smith will talk about the future of wolves and discuss the relationship between the keystone species and people. Wolves were routinely killed in Yellowstone in the late 1800s to early 1900s. The last wolf pack in the park was wiped out in 1926. Congress listed the gray wolf as endangered in 1974, paving the way for their reintroduction to Yellowstone National Park and Central Idaho 2 decades later. As of January, there were nearly 100 wolves in the park. Wolf numbers have fluctuated between 80 and 100 since 2009. Yellowstone's Facebook Live events will take place each Tuesday in March at 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A small earthquake shook an area near Yellowstone National Park over the weekend. The U.S. Geological Survey reports the quake was felt just after 6 a.m. Saturday near Cliff Lake, about 30 miles northwest of West Yellowstone. The USGS report says the quake had a 3.9 preliminary magnitude. There were no immediate reports of damage. Residents from West Yellowstone to Bozeman reported feeling the quake. This winter, a team from Billings attended a national urban forest workshop where they presented an invasive shrub that has escaped notice in Montana for years. As Kayla DeRoche reports, buckthorn is now pushing out native vegetation by the Yellowstone River in southeastern Montana.
It's a snowy day at a popular park in Billings, and city forester Steve McConnell leads the way down a forested trail towards the Yellowstone River. McConnell shows where buckthorn, a resilient thorny shrub with black berries inedible for humans, has filled in the open spaces and overtaken the cottonwood trees, essentially everywhere in this section of Riverfront Park.
The understory here is all buckthorn. You can see it's all 10, 12, 14 foot tall, really dense shrubs.
McConnell says this area should be an open savanna with plenty of distance between trees.
Eventually we would end up with basically a 20-foot tall, dense shrub layer rather than the kind of iconic Yellowstone River cottonwood forest that we have currently.
McConnell says they took their first crack at clearing the infestation last fall, and it cost around $4,000 in man-hours and supplies to treat an acre. Billings Parks estimates it needs to treat about 80 to 100 acres in Riverside, and buckthorn has already decimated about a third of the area. McConnell's concerned that if left alone, this insidious invasive could overtake the entire park.
Once it gets in as thick as it has in some places, it literally chokes out everything else. So we want.
Not only can buckthorn berries stay viable in the earth for 5 years and sprout new growths during that time, but stumps can grow multiple plants if chopped down and left untreated. Buckthorn is drawn to wetter areas, like here by the undammed Yellowstone River, where flooding usually maintains the ecosystem of the native cottonwood forests. That is, unless buckthorn blocks that growth. While buckthorn is a well-known issue in states like Minnesota and Wisconsin, it has a fairly low profile in Montana and looks kind of like another invasive, the chokecherry. That's partly why it wasn't noticed until recent years, at least according to researchers. City of Missoula Parks and Recreation Department Conservation Lands Manager Morgan Valiant was part of the push to add buckthorn to the state noxious weed list in 2017. He says buckthorn first came to Montana as an intentionally introduced decorative hedge bush at the beginning of the 20th century and remained popular until the 1970s or 80s.
And the majority of its spread now is from birds.
After recognizing it as a problem, Valiant says he and his colleagues made the effort in 2016 to pinpoint centers of large breeding populations that were established and encroaching on native ecosystems. He says they eventually narrowed it down to Missoula, Helena, Bozeman, and Billings.
You know, our online survey was sent out to a bunch of other land managers that we work with, assortment of plant geeks that we know that are across the state. And so it was not, a large statistically valid survey or survey of the entire state to try to find the distribution of the plant. It was really just to help us fine-tune where we would set up our research.
Billings City Forester McConnell says the approach they've taken is to cut the buckthorn down to a stump and apply herbicide.
It's a complicated thing. The stumps apparently seal over quickly, so you need to cut it and then treat it within 20 minutes. The people in Missoula recommended 5.
Billings Parks and Recreation will see if this past year's treatment paid off when the buckthorn leaf in the spring. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Officials have announced roads in Yellowstone National Park will be closed from the middle of March into April while workers clear snow. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reported officials announced the park will close in segments as crews start clearing the roads beginning March 15th. The park plans to reopen some roads to vehicles April 17th, depending on weather conditions. Mm-hmm. March 1st kicked off the new license year for Montana hunters, many of whom will rely on public land to punch their tags. Some of them say large out-of-state ranch owners are making it harder to get to their favorite hunting grounds. Rachel Kramer reports a hunter in Park County is pushing the courts to decide the limits of public access against private property rights.
Driving south of Livingston, it's easy to see why this area is called Paradise Valley. The wide Yellowstone River snakes through ranchlands covered in snow. To the east lie the towering Absarokas with their jagged teeth and thick forests. To the west are the drier, scrubbier foothills to the Gallatin Range. But looking at a map reveals a different image. It shows a checkerboard of public and private land, a remnant of 19th century policymaking, when the federal government gave railroad companies alternating square mile sections of land up to 20 miles from where they were laying down tracks. For decades, people in Montana have been debating whether someone can cross from one square of public land to another at the corner where they touch without illegally trespassing on privately owned land. While corner crossing is allowed in checkers, it's a contentious and legally gray area in Montana and other western states. The issue pops up regularly in the popular Bozeman-based podcast, Meat Eater.
One of my favorite things to talk about is I like to talk about corner hopping.
At public meetings about proposed hunting regulations.
A lot of corners in there.
A lot of corners right there where we can't touch.
And in online hunter chat rooms. Montana hasn't set specific laws on corner crossing, but a series of court cases coming out of Park County may indicate the limits of public access versus private property rights. Enter Cody Cherry, a retired horse trader south of Livingston. Cherry hunts and collects elk antlers in a checkerboard area of Custer Gallatin National Forest and Point of Rocks Ranch.
I'm doing what the public has a right to do.
Point of Rocks Ranch has accused Cherry of trespassing multiple times. Last year, Cherry was charged with trespassing on the ranch while corner crossing between two sections of Forest Service land. The case was dismissed. Check one for public access rights. Cherry's attorney, Carl Knuschel, leaned on a former Park County attorney's opinion from the 80s.
Swannell's opinion was that he wouldn't prosecute, it was not trespassing, to go from one public section to the next public section over that infinite corner. So once we pointed out to the county attorney that that was what the rule was before she became involved, became elected, then they dropped the charge.
The current Park and Gallatin County attorneys say corner crossing cases are reviewed on a case-by-case basis. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Access Guide says the agency doesn't recommend it without permission from the landowner. And a spokesperson with the Custer Gallatin National Forest said the agency doesn't have a position. But here's where this gets even more complicated. Because the earth is round, some of the square mile sections of land that were surveyed in the 19th century don't actually touch at the corner. In a second case last year, a jury found Cherry guilty of failing to get landowner permission for hunting on Point of Rocks Ranch when he cut across a nearly 80-foot gap between two corners of Forest Service land. His lawyer appealed to the Montana Supreme Court, saying Cherry wasn't hunting on private property, just passing through the gap to hunt on public land. The Supreme Court upheld the jury's decision in February. Check one for private property rights. Now, in a third ongoing civil case, the Point of Rocks Ranch is suing Cherry for trespassing at that same offset corner. Cherry has counterclaimed with something called prescriptive use. His attorney, Carl Knuschel, says because Cherry crossed the gap between the two corners continuously for at least 5 years without landowner permission and without hiding it, he can continue using that section of private property. So even if somebody doesn't have permission but they have that historical use, then it works.
It could be if a court determines that you met all those elements for a period of 5 years.
The attorney for Point of Rocks Ranch, Matthew Monforton, said in an email that Cherry's claim for prescriptive easement is unfounded. He declined an interview citing the pending litigation. Groups like United Property Owners of Montana have argued that prescriptive easements are a private property taking. They also say direct corner crossing is illegal because landowners have exclusive control of the airspace immediately above their property. Many private property rights advocates also argue that most landowners allow public hunting access if people ask permission first. Dane Ryder with the Montana chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers says the amount of landlocked acres in Montana isn't necessarily increasing, but when land changes hands, a new owner may decide not to let anyone through.
One of the things that is most often cited as a reason people stop hunting
is lack of access.
According to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, the number of Montana residents buying hunting licenses has been dropping by a few thousand people every year for the last 4 years. Ryder says the decline in hunters is a big problem because a lot of conservation work and programs are funded with license fees and excise taxes on guns, ammunition, and angling equipment.
With a decline in hunter numbers, you see a decline in funding for very important programs, things like Habitat Montana, which pays for conservation easements, which allows access to public lands that are typically landlocked.
5% of Montana's public land is completely landlocked by private land, according to a study by the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership and Onyx Maps. As the debate around corner crossing continues, hunters are leaning more on precise GPS apps like Onyx Hunt to navigate checkerboard areas of public and private land. Some hunters are bypassing the issue by paying helicopters and small planes to take them in and elk out. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.